Hi, and welcome to a new episode of ONS Energy Talks. My name is Inger Johanne Stenberg, and today we will look a little more into diversity, and more specifically, the changes we've seen throughout the last few decades in the energy industry. Why do we need diversity in the energy industry, you might say? What is diversity? And can diversity in teams be the key to the energy transition? Many questions, and today we are lucky to have with us a woman who started up as a cleaning lady offshore on oil platforms. She has later worked up through a heavily male-dominated industry and ended up with leadership roles in technology and energy. Now she is passionate about bringing girls into science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, also known as STEM. But not only that, she works to increase financing and investments done in the into female entrepreneurs and their projects. Welcome, Åshild Hanne Larsen, VP Subsurface Excellence and Digital in Equinor, and also co-founder of Freya Ventures and much more.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's quite a journey you have had. Why this, or how do you think about that in when you look back at it? How has it been?
It's been amazing. I am by nature a very curious person, so I always say yes to challenges. And thankfully, my employer Equinor has been extremely good at providing those challenges ever since I started off, as you rightly say, as a catering assistant offshore doing laundry and kitchen and cleaning duties. I've had lots of opportunities to move across the organization, both from the bottom almost to the top, but also vertically, because I've done lots of different things. And to me, that's made my career extremely interesting, even if it's mostly been with just one company.
Yeah, you've really gone through a huge journey and very different tasks. We're going to use that as the foundation for our talk now. Want to talk more about what that has given you of an experience, the importance of bringing girls into tech, and also touch upon how we can make ripple effects outside the energy industry, where you've just started really on your new journey. If you look back at that those years, how has those different tasks affected you and your leadership style, you think?
I think when you start at the bottom of the organization, it's an interesting perspective because many people, wrongfully I might add, think that the really important jobs in a company are the executive jobs. And yes, they are. But nothing would happen if we didn't have the lower level jobs there feeding that pipeline, so to speak. And I think my previous job as a catering assistant is a good example, because if we hadn't been there to provide food, to provide clean towels, to do the cleaning, it wouldn't have been possible to man the platform, and hence no production at that point in time would have been taken place. So I think starting down there and sort of viewing it from that lens has made me very conscious about the importance of these lower level jobs and the value they add, and also the importance of, as a leader, recognizing that contribution.
Do you think you're a better leader because of it?
I'm not the right person to ask that question, but I do think moving around like I've done from bottom to executive positions, and also across a lot of different functions from HR to IT to the subsurface, it sort of exposes you to the culture in a different way and to lots of different colleagues. And you learn about what works in different contexts. And if you want to be a successful leader and you want to achieve results, how you can do that in a sensible way, while still being you, I might add, because that's pretty important to me.
Which role or task did you like the best?
Oh, you know, that's really difficult to answer, because they all had amazing learnings. But I think the biggest leap I did, perhaps, was moving from HR to IT, because I was asked to take on a CIO role. That was back in 2015. Without having any formal qualifications or no sort of very significant experience for that type of role. So it was really a leap of faith on the side of the people who offered me the job. And for me, it was a big jump. And ironically, I have three younger brothers and they're all IT professionals. So you can imagine the shock when I shared the news that I was at that point in time Equinor's new CIO. They didn't believe me at first.
That must have been quite the surprise for them. Talking about three brothers in IT, and then you, we all know that both IT, energy, many of these areas you've been working in are heavily male dominated. So when you talk about diversity, what does that mean for you? Is it a gender thing or is it other things that come into play?
No, to me, diversity is pretty broad. I mean, you have these things that you can count and see that are visible, like gender or educational background, experience. But it's also, to me, it's basically about everything we are and everything we bring. But I have to confess that having been in male-dominated parts of the organization for a very long time, I've developed a bit of a passion for gender diversity. And that is because I just believe that we are missing out if we do not include the ideas of half the population or half the organization.
And how does it look in the energy industry when it comes to gender diversity?
There's still room for improvement, I can tell you. There's actually a very good report on this that was made by the World Petroleum Council in collaboration with BCG. It's called Untapped Reserves. They have actually released two reports like that. So if you have a deep interest in the subject like I do, I really recommend those. But according to the latest numbers that came out in 2023, we are about 23% women in the energy industry on a global level. And that's 1% up from the previous report, which was 2 years before. So you can tell that there's progress, but it's very, very slow. Baby steps is probably a good word. So I have to say that I'm very proud of my employer, Equinor, who actually has over 30% females in the organization and about 35% leaders. So I do think that we are trying to show the way here on the value of having diverse and also gender diverse teams.
Yeah. What is the value? What do you get from being conscious about diversity in your teams and your organization?
That's very easy to answer because there is a lot of research on this subject. And it basically shows that diverse teams are more innovative, diverse management teams, especially where there's enough females, are more profitable. The same goes when it comes to sustainability. If there are enough women on the team, they will normally have a higher focus on sustainability. If you think about it, it makes total sense because if everyone in a room has the same background, the same information, it's really hard to challenge. You agree quite quickly. But that agreement is in reality a trap. So if you have people who are different from you, who have different experiences and perspectives, it may make for a more challenging discussion. But the end result, the decision, will be so much better.
So a little more friction is what we're after, really.
Yes, and that's that's something a lot of people are a bit worried about because it feels very comfortable to lead a team of people that are exactly like yourself. Everyone watches the same TV shows. Everyone grew up the same way. But this sort of feeling of comfortableness doesn't equal performance. So if you want your team to perform and you to lead a team that performs, you have to make sure that it's a diverse team. For you as a leader, yes, it can be a little bit more challenging, but it's also so much more rewarding. And I think that's what we need to focus on.
Tell us a little bit more about how you, because one thing is how you set up your teams today with grown-up people, but you have a passion for also working with younger girls to achieve, like think strategically, really, like far ahead. How do you work? And tell us a little bit about your passion in that.
No, I just think it's incredibly important to ensure that regardless of gender, you have the same opportunity set. And from where I'm sitting, working with technology on a daily basis, it's just incredibly clear that the people who choose technology are the people who are going to shape the future. They are going to decide what products and services that we are going to consume, how we're going to work, how we're going to live our lives. And I really believe that we need ideas and perspectives from people who are different if we're going to build solutions that work across this spectrum of society or organizations where they are going to be used. So to me, that's just something that I love doing. And thankfully, Equinor is really conscious about this as well, as any sort of big responsible employer should be, because it is critical for companies like Equinor to build a pipeline of talent in the longer term to make sure that, especially now when we're in an energy transition, that there are people with new ideas who can challenge us, who can make it go faster. So that's an accountability that I think that companies like Equinor needs to take.
I know that these topics will be highly on the agenda at ONS, definitely. And there are several books written about the subjects on how women think differently when they invent things. They have a different user perspective on how they think in technological teams. So I know many of the program sessions will have this high on the agenda, and we will have ONS Young as well with a lot of students. Let's talk about when we talk about investing in a future, because this is another one of your passions and focus areas. You have highlighted a lot how few of the board members, the CEOs, are female, not only in Norway, but in general. You've talked a lot about investments in female entrepreneurs. When did this start, and how has the journey been there?
Goodness, where to begin? I think I'll take this back to my grandmother, actually, who was a big role model for me when I was a kid. She was incredibly smart and had three brothers. And when they all reached seventh grade in school, she was the only one who wasn't allowed to continue her education because there was only money for the boys, because they were going to be providers of families and she wasn't. And as a result of that, she told me from the time I could listen that women could be and do anything they ever wanted. And I have a really firm belief in that. And that's sort of at the core of many of the things I do. And I would say that when I started digging into this 10, 15 years ago, I had the assumption that Norway was extremely forward-leaning when it comes to gender equality. And we are, in many cases. We have legislation around board participation. We have a work life where women are very actively represented. But at the same time, as you mentioned, the situation is, if you look at numbers from 2022, that only 15% of the top 200 companies in Norway have a female CEO, and only 13% of the same companies have a female board chair. And to me, that's just, this is going to sound stupid, but it's a little bit wasteful, because it means that for a large part of the population that I assume have great ideas, they are not properly heard and they don't get into the position where they could have an impact and can drive that through.
But is that structural, you think? Or is it they don't have their own the confidence to actually go for it? Or is it people that hold them back? Or what do you think are the reasons for this?
I think it's very hard to point to one reason, because then you start stereotyping right away. Women are as different as men, and there are lots of different stories and choices and reasons, but I do think all the three that you mentioned are relevant in this context. It can be about confidence, it can be about opportunity, it can be about lack of support, it can be many things.
And one way of actually doing something about that is not only talk highly of the women that actually achieve things and push each other up, but also investing. And one of your things that you've been very vocal about is the lack of investing in the good ideas that actually female entrepreneurs have. Tell us about the numbers there, because you have some scary numbers.
They're pretty horrid, actually, because in 2021, only 1% of venture capital actually ended up with female founders. And if you have as a starting point, at least I do, that ideas, good ideas are not gender specific, that means we're missing out on about half of the ideas that could actually revolutionize Norway, our industry, the green shift, you name it. I think we have to take that very seriously.
How do we do that?
No, I think it starts with perhaps thinking about how we can, well, we're sitting in a building today that houses Nysna climate investments. And that is a choice the government has made to establish that, to ensure that we have capital for those ideas. And I've said this publicly before, I think we could do the same when it comes to female founders and gender equality. And I think it would be enormously rewarding, but also profitable. Because there are many misconceptions out there that women are risk averse and they're not ambitious and this and that. That's honestly not true. And there is documentation that shows that female founders create companies that are equally as or more profitable than male founders do.
And now you even started a venture capital company to do something about this together with another group of females. Very interesting to see. How do you see that part of it and your passion for diversity in energy going the next 5-10 years?
Now, first I have to say that I'm enormously grateful to my employer, Equinor, who actually allow employees after a thorough review and process to do things like that, because this is a pet project that I do in my spare time, of which there isn't a lot, I may add. But I do think there is a clear link here, because it sort of starts with the young girls, making them aware of the opportunities, making them choose an education that exposes them to that entire opportunity set, and then making sure that if they have ideas, if they want to create their own company, that there is an opportunity for that. So for me, this has been a very sort of natural progression in a way.
Well, it will definitely be an interesting journey to follow further. I know a lot of female entrepreneurs probably very happy to hear thoughts coming from you. To finish us off, is diversity always a good thing?
Honestly, I think so. Many may argue that while you have faster decisions, if people agree faster, yeah, that's probably true, but then it means that it's probably not the best decision. So diversity is a bit of work, and it requires us to be interested in perspectives that others offer that are different from our own. And that can be perhaps a bit challenging, but it's also, from my perspective at least, the best development and learning that you can have. And in my role in Equinor, what I've learned the most from is actually meeting people in different areas who do different things and have different views, because that has helped me to develop my own and to, in many ways, become the person that I am today.
So an open mind.
At least I try. I don't always succeed. You know, there's something called unconscious bias, and I am a victim of that occasionally as
well. I think we all are, definitely. To round off, I must say also for us in ONS, it's been really important to secure diversity on our stages and also in the exhibition, and not just gender diversity, it's age, geography, culture, much more. But we do see it's quite a lot of work to get that representation on all our arenas. That's definitely true. But I hope our work and our striving for this will be testament at or visible at ONS in August. Hope to see you all there. And I know, Åshild Hamne, you will be there.
I will be there. And I cannot underline enough how much I appreciate the thought that you're putting into this. Because like with ONS Young, people will be coming in and they will be seeing people that they can recognize, people that are like them. And there's something about having role models and having this opportunity to actually see someone that you identify with do something that you want to do. it's very hard to be the first one who does something. It's easier once you have organizations and conferences like ONS who really are thoughtful about it and make sure that there is a view towards the future and a view towards the opportunities. So I, for one, am very appreciative about that.
That's a good message to close off with. Mark your calendars, 26th to 29th of August in Stavanger, and follow us on LinkedIn and ons.no. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast where you find podcasts, and we will release more episodes as we're closing in on the main event on leadership, energy security, different technologies, and much more. Thank you again, Åse Lanne Larsen, for being our guest today. My name is Inger Johanne Stenberg, and see you in August.